Hello, everyone, and 2018 to you. Welcome to the Pod Stallions Retro Awards for 2017. We try to do this every year around this time and just talk about our favorite stuff. And with me to my right is Mr. Brian Heiler.
I'm actually on your left.
Oh, sorry, you're on my left. Sorry.
I'm like a ninja.
I'm wearing that eye patch on my left. I didn't notice. So what we're gonna do is sort of go through the stuff that's all sort of in the wheelhouse of the show and stuff we talk about that mainly has come out in 2017 in different categories.
Yeah, please don't stick us, because like dates and those sort of things, they become weird to me, and I don't know about you, but
A couple of these I might fudge a little bit. Like, it might be a book that I actually got this year but might have come out the year before. But
it is entirely possible that I choose the same thing that I chose in the 2016 Retro Awards.
And that is completely okay. There's no judging here. So we broke it up into movies, DVDs, toys, books, and kitchen appliances. No, that's not right. Sorry.
Oh, well. And Cuisinart.
Books and TV shows.
Movies, with a few, TV. Yeah, yeah.
Movies, DVDs, toys, books, and TV series.
Yeah.
And not necessarily in order to them, but we're going to each try to keep it to like our one favorite, I guess, toward the end. But it's just more of a mishmash of stuff. Yeah. And, you know, mainly we're keeping it the genre heavy. So,
and keeping it real.
And keeping it real.
Yeah.
So I'll start with movies, and we'll build up to our favorites, I guess.
Sure.
And I'm not
hastily writing the list right now. I did this at work.
Right. But he left the list at work.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. I'm kidding. Okay, so what I'm going to do right off the bat so we can get this out of the way is I'm going to cheat a little bit. Because this is a movie that actually came out the first week of January, just now. But it might still be out, and I want to recommend it and talk about it if nobody has seen it. And also because I discovered the DVD last year around this time of the first movie, and that is Paddington 2. I absolutely adore this movie. I love the first one, and it's not what you think. I mean, if people think it's just like a kid thing, or like it's just, you know, a lot of the stuff that's being made for kids is played on both levels. You know, a secret life of pets or things like that. There's a lot of stuff for kids to dig. These two movies to me are about the closest I've come across to the Muppet movie and the Great Muppet Caper that we saw when we were kids.
Oh, no kidding.
That level of, you know, the characters appealing, you know, for kids, and there's some goofiness and silliness, but there are visual gags and little in jokes and things that all the adults are going to get. You know, there's in the second one, there's a criminal, you know, that he goes to jail for a crime he didn't commit, sort of thing. And Brendan Gleeson is a bad guy. He's holding up a newspaper that's called The Hard Times. And then there's an article on the front of the paper that says, get out of jail free card, not legally binding, or something. You know, it's got loads of stuff like that. And I remember seeing the first one and thinking, boy, that's really smart. And it reminds me of the Muppet stuff.
Yeah, the early Muppet movies are pretty clever.
Yeah, and the thing is, what's cool about this, and what sort of ties it in here, is there's, you know, lots of, you know, genre-friendly people in it, like Sally Hawkins is in it. Jim Broadbent, who people know from loads of stuff, but he was in, you know, Brazil. The guy that does the voice of Paddington is the new Q from the new Bond films. Ben Wishaw.
He's a nice name too.
And it's directed, they're directed by a guy called Paul King, who was the director of all the Mighty Boosh episodes, all those shows.
Oh, God, that's a beautiful caliber right there. Like, that's, I love the Mighty Boosh.
And it's written by Paul King and a guy called Simon Farnby. And if you know the Boosh, then you know the one where they, remember the episode where there's two guys that are acting just like Howard and Vince, but they're doing a variation on their stuff, but they're kind of dressing the same. And they're, one of them's called, like, you know, Howard Boone instead of Moon, you know? Well, one of those guys is Simon Farnaby. The tall one is Simon Farnaby. And they co-wrote these things, and they're just really clever and funny and sweet. And, you know, like the essence of kind of a family film, but they remind me of the early Muppet thing. And then of course the work with Paddington is just wonderful. Like the voice work and the, just the animation and everything. So if you haven't seen it, I'd say get the first DVD. You'll enjoy it. And it's also one of these things where, like, you know, if you remember the Muppet things, it was like, you know, nobody really said, oh, look, there's a pig and there's a... So the bear is just kind of there. It's like, well, what's going on there? Well, it seems to be there's a bear with a suitcase, but you know, don't talk to strangers. Let's go this way. There's no, oh, my gosh, it's a bear. What the heck is it doing here? It's just matter of fact. The whole thing is just kind of matter of fact. And the cast is amazing, and Hugh Grant is better than he's been in ages. You know, this horrible.
I loved him in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
He's on a roll, man, because he's great in this. So I thought I'd tell you.
Actually, I completely, sincerely loved him in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I did too,
Mr. Waverly. Yeah.
I actually wish he had been in it more. I thought he was great. I wanted him. I want another one of those movies really badly, and I don't know if we're ever going to get it, but. So watch, see the first movie and try to get out and see this one if you can, if it's still out. I just wanted to throw that in there. So what would you pick as one of your favorite movies of the year?
Well, I had a few, but I think I'll start, like, you know, there's a few I liked, but I wouldn't put them in my top three. And I'm having a little trouble with my top three because it's a four.
Okay. We can do that.
Go with, first of all, I want to say that, you know, the superhero genre, there's movies I really enjoyed. I personally enjoyed Guardians 2. I loved Justice League. I thought it was fun, but I wouldn't put them in my top four.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one of the movies I want to talk about is Get Out.
Yes, absolutely. Love it.
And there's a number of reasons why I would include it on my list. Is one, this used to be a thing. There used to be a genre called black horror.
Yes.
And, you know, it was very predominant in the 70s, and it was very fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I really couldn't get over how much I enjoyed Get Out.
It reminded me of a great Twilight Zone, you know, like a really smart but expanded to a, you know, first time writer director was like, wow, that he pulled this off. It's so scary.
Well,
that's in
I
my
don't mean to say
that's in my top five.
I'm not
too,
saying but. Because it's a black director, but it's black theme.
No, yeah, dark comedy, like a dark themed horror with some comedic elements in it too. You know,
it's like Sugar Hill,
mm-hmm.
or you know, but I think the last one we had was probably Tales from the Hood, Rusty Condiff's movie in the 90s,
right?
And that was long overdue.
Yeah,
I really dug Get Out. It was. Much like it looked good, but it was much better than I even expected.
I thought it was wonderful. It's in my top five. That's what, another one I was going to talk about because.
Oh, cool!
It's cool. It's cool. I just thought it was so well done. I love the guy in it, the lead. Did you ever see Sicario?
Yeah.
Did you ever see Sicario?
Yeah, I don't know his name, but and I think I love movies where. Like, everyone always talks about, like, let's cast Batman as this famous actor.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, let's cast Batman as a guy we've all never seen.
Yeah, and even
let that happen.
He's British, that guy. Daniel,
oh, is he?
Daniel whatever. His name. I think he actually might be in Black Panther as well. But he's British, and the first thing I ever saw him in was an offshoot of The League of Gentlemen called Psychoville, which... Steve Pemberton and Reese Shearsmith went off and did for two seasons, which is really bizarre. Before they did Inside Number 9, which is the show that I keep screaming about how great it is, which I think is now on Amazon or Hulu or something. But he's British, and then he was in Sicario, and he's wonderful in Sicario. And now this thing, I mean, he carries the whole thing. I think he's just because he's in like every scene, you know, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So that's that's on my list too. Back to genre type stuff, superhero stuff, Thor Ragnarok. I just loved it. I absolutely loved it. It was the right amount of goofy. It was the right amount of different and weird. I loved the Kirby stuff that they threw in there. I just think if you're going to keep these things fresh and we're going to do them, you know, twice a year, whatever it is, they all have to be different. And I think Marvel does a good job with that.
I'll give you, I'm superheroed out to the nth degree, but I hate Thor movies. I've hated the last two. Like I went to see them and thought, well, I never need to see those again.
Okay.
And Thor's fun in the Avengers movies, and I got kind of semi-dragged by my kids to see this one, and I gotta admit, it was a lot of fun. I have no reservations about seeing it. I like the addition of the Zeppelin music. I liked the comedy. It was, yeah, that was money well spent for me. I enjoyed that movie.
I think they said that he, from the minute he got the assignment, he said, we got to have the Immigrant Song. Got to have it for this thing.
Yeah.
And they wanted to, I mean, they say negotiations were going on right up until the final edit, because it was a huge amount of money to pay for this thing. But they got it for the trailer, which was like, you know, he was like, okay, we got it for the trailer, we're going to have it in the movie. And I just love the notion that he was thinking backwards like that, which I think was really cool. Okay, so what's another one from you?
This shouldn't come as a humongous surprise, but I liked War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really... I watched...
Well, the whole Planet of the Apes, that trilogy he's done, is fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't need to see another one, but if we get another one, I'm sure with Disney now owning the apes, we will. But I hope to God we see a Taylor landing on this Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah, they're so well written. My only problem with them, and this has nothing to do with it creatively or anything to do with the quality of the film, I have a hard time watching where anything ugly is happening to these creatures.
But that's a testament to the film itself.
Exactly. It makes my skin crawl. And even if I think they're going to be okay by the end, it's so hard. It's like nails on a chalkboard almost, because I can't take any of that stuff. And it's,
I can't watch anything where a baby gets hurt.
I haven't had a kid, but I understand that. Yeah. The animal thing, I just always, it's like, you know, the innocence of it. But I mean, I remember that one about Matthew Broderick was like a missiles tester or something, and they had to train chimps to
Project X.
And there's that scene toward the end where the monkey, the poison's going in this room, but he still needed the monkey to do something, and the chimp does it. And I lost it. I mean, if I saw that today, I'd lose it. I can't take that stuff, man. I can't take that stuff. So, but it's a wonderful movie. And, my favorite in the movie is Steve Zahn, who is one of these guys like
Sam, Bad Monkey.
That's like Sam Rockwell, who is so fantastically good in everything he does that you just go, well, maybe he's never going to be a household name, because that's not the point. You know, he shows up in things. He's either a dad or he's a burnout or he's whatever. And
he was like the dad in the Wimpy Kid.
He was dad in the Wimpy Kid movies. And he's terrific in those. He's great in those. And
I've never seen those.
They're actually better than you'd think. I own the box set. See, no, I'm kidding. I don't own the box
to
set.
To someone, I didn't know you had seen.
No, I came across one of them once, and I'm like, "Oh, there's Steve Zahn. He's the dad." And so I got wrapped into it and started watching it. But yes, it's wonderful. Not quite in my top, but so Ragnarok, and then I would say. Again, there's no order to these except for the top one, I think, for me.
I guess so.
I'm going to throw in Shape of Water, because while I did not love it, I really, really liked it. I have some issues with it, but, you know, Del Toro kind of does go goofy sometimes, and, you know, whatever. I just love also that he's in a position to make movies like this, that he comes along and goes, this is what I want to do. this is the theme, this is the creed, whatever, and go.
Actually,
and then
I
it
can
gets...
tell you the story behind that, because my friend, my good friend Sean, I had dinner with him not too long ago, he was one of the creature guys.
Well, then he knows, have we talked about Mike Hill, the guy I know, Mike Mickey Hill?
Yeah.
We talked about, yeah, and he does, so he did a lot of the creature stuff too, right? Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they would know each other, because the cover of Special Effects Magazine has the three guys working on the suit, and Sean's actually the guy behind the monster. You can see his face, but...
Okay.
And he was telling me that Del Toro was so possessed to make this movie that he was going to do it on his own, with his own money.
Oh, wow.
And I think Fox Searchlight said, we'll give you X amount, but you got to make it color. He was going to make it black and white, because, you know, cheaper to make.
Mm-hmm.
And so yeah, this is a passion project for him.
Yeah,
completely.
Yeah. So. And it's really good. I think it gets a little too
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind. But you'll
that's a disservice to a friend. You know?
Yeah. Hopefully he's not listening.
I've been dying to see it. My wife is dying to see it. We just haven't found a free weekend. Maybe I'll do it this week. Maybe I'll bite the bullet.
Yeah, no, it's really good. It's really good. Again, you know, a lot of the stuff that everybody's screaming about this year as like the best things of the whole year, like I don't agree with many of them across the board. I think some of them are quite good. Some just eh. Like Three Billboards, I love that movie. You know, I saw it in the theater and then I saw it on a screener, and I love that guy's stuff. If it ends up being Shape of Water and that's what everybody screams about, all the better, because we need more of his stuff. And, you know, he's a real visionary with what he does. Your next one?
Bright. I couldn't sit through 40 minutes of that. Kong Skull Island.
I was going to put that, and then
I didn't get the chance to see it in the theater, but I saw it on a home video, and I got to do it on the backyard screen. We have a projector, and we
watch
movies in the backyard, and what a perfect movie for the yard. I liked the Godzilla movie that came out in 2014, 2015,
mm-hmm.
Remember when that came out?
Mm-hmm.
I Kong Skull Island was so much, like, it just... And I was worried about it. That's why I didn't see it in the theater, because I'm sick of the story of going there and then getting on the boat, and then, you know,
yep.
Peter Jackson version's not my favorite.
Yep.
They just got right to the monsters. It was unapologetic. It wasn't embarrassed to be a Kong movie, and it was fun as hell.
I will say this. I saw it in the theater, and I was sitting there, and just take this the right way. This isn't like a dig or anything, but I'm watching the movie, and it's like, you know, where are we going to find this guy? Well, they say he's in the worst backwater, you know, back end watering hole of the da-da-da, and then they, you know, meet him, and there's a fight, and they talk about money. It's like, and if you're going to hire me to track something, what are you tracking? You know, and it's like every music cue... Every bit of like, oh, you're a woman. You know, the whole thing, that the first 15 minutes, I'm watching it going...
Oh, yeah, and even Jackson's character, you know, they set him up. It is ridiculous.
The first 15 minutes is so telegraphed, and like every music cue and every, you know, now that's a slow-mo of the guys taking pictures of themselves and playing a turntable, you know. As soon as that first tree gets thrown at the chopper... From that moment on, it just never lets up. And it's a completely different movie than the first 15. I almost think the first 15 minutes are so telegraphed that...
They're a bit hackneyed. You're right. I forgot about those.
He's trying to lull you into thinking, well, you know, I know what you're thinking, but just wait, because we're gonna turn this thing when Kong shows up. And I just thought it was just wonderful. I've watched it twice on DVD, and I just think it's...
I actually probably will pick that up on Blu-ray, because it would be a fun watch. I enjoyed the hell out of it, and
That's what the Kong movie That's what we've wanted. We don't need a retread of the romance and the thing. And God. I want Kong to just start fighting monsters and everybody to watch, you know, and and stuff.
Make that interesting.
Yeah. Well, I'm about to say one that I'm not sure that you've seen, but I think you've heard me talk about it enough. And it is my favorite movie of the year and one of my new top 10 movies of all time. And, you know, favorite for this thing, even with the genre stuff. And that's Blade Runner 2049.
I hadn't mentioned that.
I just, and believe me, if anybody was going to be critical of it that didn't think it was necessary to even go down this road, it would have been me. And then the more I read about this, and the more I heard about it, the more I thought, they're doing it right. You know, they're getting the right people, and who knows what this thing is going to be like. And I just love it. I saw it 4 times in the theater because it is one of those immersive experiences that you just... You know, it should be seen on the big screen, and the sound and the soundtrack and the music cues and that, and it does again what few things have been able to do, like to kind of do the impossible, which is continue, you know, the vibe of the original film, which has become this thing that everybody holds up as one of the best, you know, sci-fi movies of all time, and it, you know, which nobody saw when it came out and all that stuff. It continues some of that vibe. It expands on it. It goes to new and different places. And then at the heart of it, it's like a film noir, like The Big Sleep or The Maltese Falcon. It is a detective movie, in a way that the original, I think that Ridley Scott like wanted the original to be this future noir, and it was going to be more of a detective thing, which didn't quite pan out in the original film. This one is, and having watched it multiple times and, you know, DVD and whatever, it's like, it is like a Swiss watch, the script. It is so tight, and every scene and every little thing that happens leads to the next thing. And you got to pay attention, but it's, you know, the visuals just, and when Harrison Ford shows up, I think it's the best thing, the best acting that Harrison Ford's done in decades. I just loved it. I just love it every which way. So that's my top movie of the year.
Yeah, you were hugely excited about that movie, and I'm not a big fan of the original, as I've said before.
Right.
So it didn't really appeal to me, and it was competing with other movies. But I'm happy you got that made, because I don't know how well it did.
Was it
popular?
It did. You know, if you look at the stuff, you know, something like Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, I think it's like audience and critically, it's like 94%. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it got a lot of reviews. Like I mean,
but
Blade,
you know,
Runner itself was a box office like dud, but it,
oh, complete,
you know,
dud.
Obviously,
yeah.
If you get a big budget sequel, there's something there.
Well, do I think they might have relied a little too heavily on just the Blade Runner audience or how many fans that there were or whatever? But beyond all that, it's like, you know, he made it. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes, but if you take the credits off the back, it's 2:30. So that's about the average length of a Bond film. The difference is, you're watching this thing, and if you try to sit and watch like a Transformers movie, there's an edit about every 2 or 3 seconds in a Transformers movie. Like you never get a shot of two people sitting at a table speaking to each other, like a wide shot of two people. It's always
Let's not hold anything to a freaking Transformers movie. They aren't
okay. Well. Okay. So even some of the Marvel stuff, it's on the go. It's not nearly what the Transformers are. But the Marvel stuff is, it's on the go. You know, it's go go go, move. Well, here's Blade Runner 2049. It just takes its time, and I mean, you know, the slow pushes into when he's walking up to this building or to the right, and it's gorgeous, and it reminds me of those, you know, movies like The Godfather and things like that just took their time and let things sort of breathe. And I, you know, if it was a 90 minute movie, I think it would have done double what it did, but it was a long movie and I'm not sure how many people went back to see it again, but it did well. It's not a bomb by any means, but it did well. But what I love is, again, like Del Toro, I think Denis Villeneuve or Villeneuve, whatever it is one of these people that we need making movies like this, because he did it the way he wanted to. He took his time. They built real sets. You know, he got the cast that he wanted, etc. And he's going to do Dune. That's the next thing he's doing. And I'm thinking,
I'm very excited. That news, I thought you must be like naked right now.
Oh my God. I'm very excited. And also because, you know, Prisoners, Sicario, Arrival, he's like, you know, and then he did one in between the lights. Yeah. He's you know, and I mean, this thing in, for my money, should have been nominated for every award, but if for sure Roger Deakins got nominated, and if Roger Deakins does not win the Oscar for this thing, the guy's been nominated like 18 times, I think, and he's never won. And his work in this thing is just phenomenal. It's really something. It's kind of a miracle movie to me that it happened. And again, it's not for everyone, and not everybody, you know, loved it like I did. I've not met anyone that didn't like it, but some are just kind of, it's okay, you know, whatever. But yeah. I, of course, I'm biased, but then I'm that much more biased that if it was off the mark, I would be, you know, all over it. So yeah, those are, then what was, so what's your top one? What's your best one?
I gotta go with Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
The DC movie that had everything against it. It's a character nobody thought could hold her own movie. You know, I don't know if you were like me, but I watched her in Batman versus Superman and thought, this girl can't act.
And I remember seeing her in that and thinking, boy, she's awfully skinny.
Oh, like, that wasn't the problem for me. It was the weirdness.
I felt like she needed to be a bigger, more imposing sort of. But I guess that's dumb.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I can get past that.
Right, right.
You know, like, I agree with you. I think Wonder Woman should be kind of a solid gal. But I was more worried about just, like, she was like Natalie Portman was in the Force, you know, the Star Wars prequels, where it's just sort of
right
a little wooden. And then, like, but so was everybody. And,
yeah.
You get a good director. I think Patty Jenkins has really shown that she's a fantastic director.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a wonderful story. And the whole film worked for me. I saw it twice. And
I thought it was great. It was great. I thought a lot of it was her. She sold the naivete and the sort of innocence mixed with the stubbornness, and you know, it was just a great concoction of what we were wanting in one of these DC movies. And I thought she was great.
My wife is a bit of a proto-feminist, and she was like, you know, well, there's too much screen time for Chris Pine. And it's like, she's a fish out of water. And you need the right kind of... It's not male-female, it's story-wise. And Chris Pine is perfect for this.
Yeah, he was, and he's kind of the audience. But further, I think it's kind of... It's that, you know... Let's get if this is going to be the origin thing, and you know, Steve Rogers, let's get it out of the way. Let's make sure we get that in there. And that's part of the reason it's there. And cause I know that was a complaint from a lot of women that it was, you know, there still needed to be a guy in there, whatever, but it's like, okay, well that's part of the history. And now we can go on the next one now that this is out of the way. But she was wonderful. Yeah. I thought that was great. That was great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
Love that movie. So, what in the category do you want to move on to next?
Well, I thought maybe, because this might not be lengthy, but since we're in the world of movies, maybe we do DVDs.
Yeah, okay. I don't know about you, but like the last few years, I don't buy every Blu-ray that comes my way. I seem to buy a lot of stuff that's a little bit odd now because, you know, everything's on demand and
mm-hmm.
I tend to be a long tail purchaser more than anything else these days.
What's a long tail purchaser?
The long tail, sorry. It's a wonderful book about marketing online and that, you know, everything in Walmart is the most popular thing you can buy and it appeals to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
On Amazon, they have what is called the long tail and you can buy whatever weird and obscure thing that you're looking for because it's not the same business model.
Oh, okay. And it's called, why is it called long tail?
Long tail marketing? Because it's a long tail you can buy from.
T-A-I-L.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you're more of a long tail. So you more dip in for
It's niches. You know,
niches.
Yeah, that I'm struggling for. Mm-hmm. It's been a long day. Working out my long tail business. But yeah, so I will not buy Wonder Woman on Blu-ray now because I know at my grocery store when I turn the corner I'm going to see a bin and it's going to be full of every superhero movie I ever want for $10.
Right. Right.
And then.
Right.
But I will never be that way with horror exploitation, black exploitation, weird, obscure, almost boutique places that they preserve and love these movies and make them better. So mm-hmm. I've got tons of those. So why don't you go first with your best Blu-ray pick of the year?
Oh, well, so I was, yeah. So again, I'm trying to think in terms of what was released this year. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, you know, but again, if it was like an obscure new release of an old movie or something, that would work. That would work too. But,
absolutely.
Okay. So let's go with, I'm going to go with actually the one that, one of the ones I thought was the best thing, one of the best things I saw on DVD this year was that 2000 AD documentary that you sent me.
Oh, that was freaking awesome. Yeah, that came from Kindly Separate Films.
That sent us, and I just thought that was terrific. It's called Future Shock, the story of 2000 AD. The interviews are pretty in-depth. It's lengthy, and then there's also a ton of extra interviews on the DVD. And yes. And the best thing for me was like...
Oh, I didn't check those out.
Like, there was a documentary on Showtime a couple weeks ago about XTC, the band XTC, called XTC, yeah. This Is Pop. And I've got a lot of XTC stuff, and I know bits about it, but this documentary just, you know, the next day it was like, okay, what am I missing? I got to get this box set from Andy Partridge, and I got to, you know, it made me that, well, this 2000 AD thing is like, you know, I know bits and bobs about 2000 AD and where certain things came from and et cetera. I don't know the story, the full story.
Wasn't that
I know
great?
Some of the overlap, and I thought it was so... So well done. Like, just there was a lot of love put into that thing.
I also picked up Severin Films also did, and they sent us that, by the way. I got to thank mm-hmm. them again. But they also picked up one of their titles, just as an aside, called Return of Kung Fu Trailers of Fury. And
ooh.
That was a lot of fun. You can put that on at parties, and, you know, it's one of those great things where nobody has to actually be watching it and has a good time.
Right. Well, that's, and Severin, there was something else. I know they sent a batch of stuff, but were those all Severin things?
Yeah, it was all from Severin.
It was all Severin. Okay.
It's funny how much of their stuff I already have.
It's actually not that surprising.
They sent me, what it was, as I mentioned, Turkey Shoot in a podcast. Someone that works there, and his name is, it's late. I'm sorry, I should have looked this up. Heard it and said, I want to send you Turkey Shoot. And there was also another fellow.
That's right.
Yeah, who sent me some wonderful stuff by the name of Don Picton that I really need to plug because I still have it. It's a Friend Prices on Etsy. He sent me some cool as chips monster stuff. I will promote this stuff. It's amazing. This guy's art and design is fantastic. I didn't
give
it to you because I kept it. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Well, I'm glad you're big enough to admit it.
Don and I should go bowling because he likes all the same kind of like monster rack toys that I do. And
that's awesome.
Illinois, I should really meet him. Okay, sorry to get off on.
Plan. You guys should plan a sleepover when the show's done. When we're done with the show.
See if my mom
so what? Okay. What would you? What would you put as one of your DVDs? Done? Did you already say
DVDs
you didn't say?
Turn this year would be. They're all crap, by the way. They're all movies that get bombs and stuff. But one of my favorites was I had a really rough couple of weeks in the early part of the year last year. I go to my local video store, RIP, it's closed now, and he had by Kino Lorbra, I believe it was, APE, which is spelt with the MASH logos, and this okay. is a King Kong ripoff in 3D from the late 70s. Instead of Jessica Lange, we have the mom from Growing Pains, and it is a Korean knockoff of King Kong, and it's trash. It's hilarious trash. And it made my evening.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I've heard. That sounds familiar. That kind of sounds familiar to me.
In the middle of the film, the giant ape who is fighting some toy helicopters just turns around, and gives the finger to the army.
So it's a documentary.
Just the finger, but just like, you know, his arm goes in his forearm, you know.
Right. I'll have to look that up. I'll have to look that one up.
I love King Kong knockoffs. I like them better than King Kong. For some reason, there's just something so charming about watching terribleness, like trying to imitate something that was, you know, the 1933 Kong, and it's 1969 or 1976, and you still can't replicate its greatness.
Can't get it right. Nah. Can't do it right.
It's not even fair.
Okay, well, we'll move on with DVDs. The other one I'd say, there's not much. Oh, I thought we were going to go back and forth, but no, go ahead. What else?
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, maybe I'll just go through the ones that I have left, and then you do
I've
yours.
I've got two more, so I thought we'd just go one, two.
Okay, I would say the other thing that I thought was really neat, because it's a favorite movie of mine, and there's not a lot of merchandise made for it. There's a Blu-ray set for Close Encounters of the Third Kind that's out, that is in this neat little box that when you press the button on the side, lights up as if you're looking into the ship, you know, when the door opens and the aliens come out, it's like that slit, and it plays the first part of the Close Encounters theme, this Blu-ray packaging. And so, of course, naturally, since I've owned the movie in every possible format that it's ever existed in, I had to get it, and I did. So it's got some extras of like some Spielberg home movie sort of things on it that weren't on the original DVD release. And then all the different cuts of the movie. And I'm going to say this because we have this platform to do this with. Because I've mentioned things sometimes on the show that people have then sent us a link to or said, you know, I've heard of that thing or you're looking for it. Here it is. Unless I'm completely crazy, in an old issue of Starlog, there was an ad. What?
I think we've talked about this or someone sent me this. There was like an ad to get like a paperweight. What is
yes.
that thing? Like,
yes. It's yeah. Like Devil's Tower with the mothership.
Yeah.
Wait, I've talked about this before?
No, you know what? I won't say that, but I think people have sent me that link. I have been at this for a long time, and I have no... I think the last time someone sent that to me, I was like, oh, no, I'm not Jason.
Cause, like, okay, I must have talked about this because there's a very good chance this thing was never made. You know, there could have been an ad in Starlog for it one time and it never got made. I can't even find the image of the ad online.
Somebody sent me the image of the ad. That was it.
Okay.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Then you got to forward that to me because if there's anybody out there that knows what I'm talking about, if this thing ever existed, some, you know, they used to call it shit metal, you know, white metal, those very cheaply done little. And it was like Devil's Tower and the mothership. And I don't know how I would have missed it as a kid in this magazine where I didn't mail away for it or ask my mom to write a check or something. So that's another one I got. And then I got two more, but you go ahead.
I've got two more as well. So why don't we just go through it? One of my absolute favorites this year by Vinegar Syndrome was the, Haunting of Nurse Sherry. I am a massive fan of Al Adamson, Sam Sherman, independent international films. And Nurse Sherry is one of my favorites. This DVD Blu-ray combo is fantastic. For those that don't know, Nurse Sherry is the combination of the, you know, the naughty nurse theme with The Exorcist. Which
Ooh.
Is brilliant.
That's a combo made in heaven.
It is a combo made in heaven if your name is Brian. And what's even better was, well, not better, but I got it in and they used an original poster, which is pretty suggestive on the Blu-ray package. And I got it and I was excited to watch it. It is an R-rated film.
Mm-hmm.
But my daughter walks by and goes, Dad, is this like an adult movie? Are you? And I was like, yeah, well, how do you know what those are? But of course, you know.
This You're grounded.
The world works, but it's like, yeah, honey, I just slapped a porno on the dining room table. That's how I roll.
You've just given up.
Yeah,
I'm gonna just watch some old porn here in the kitchen.
I want everyone to know. But yeah, I haven't found the, because, you know, in my youth, in my 30s and early 40s, everyone would go to bed and I would be able to watch whatever I wanted. Cause you know, my wife doesn't want to sit and watch this or, but no one goes to bed anymore. So I'm having a little bit of a challenge popping these in unless I sit in my office, but
I'm planning some me time.
Yeah. I need some me time.
Should have a meeting.
Or I need a better chair in this office, because watching movies in an office chair just kind of sucks.
What's the other one? You had a second one, you said.
My last one is the Shout Factory keeps releasing these amazing box sets of Paul Naschy films. And the Paul Naschy collection, too, it doesn't have the world's greatest cover, but they are beautiful, amazing prints of some movies I did not own. I'm a huge Paul Naschy fan. For those that don't know who he is,
give us some background on who, because that name sounds familiar again, but I don't know if I know who that is.
Paul Naschy, the best description I can give him is he's Spain's Lon Chaney. He was a monster fan, and in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, he made horror films in Spain. And he's well-meaning, occasionally well-made films where he is the lead character. He's most famous for playing Waldemar Daneski, the Wolfman, but he played hunchbacks and vampires, and he's in a ton of horror films. And
are these more lighter fare, or are these more, you know, hard, not hardcore, but you know, like, is she like a contemporary of Coffin Joe, right? Coffin Joe, isn't that the other guy?
I love Coffin Joe. In fact, the last time I bought a Paul Naschy film, I bought a Coffin Joe box set. He's contemporary to Coffin Joe in the way that he kind of marches to his own drummer. You know, a lot of his films, you know, during the period where Exorcist movies or slasher movies were popular, he was still making a more traditional horror movie. And I kind of respect that, of course, being a fan of the more monster chiller horror theater type films. He was carrying that torch up until a certain point. That's why I'm such a ardent fan of his and Coffin.
Is it M as in Mary, M-A-C-Y? Is that how you say the name?
Like Nancy, but not Nancy. He's not a Nancy.
So N-A-C-Y.
N-A-C-H. N-A-S-C-H-Y.
Naschy. Okay, I gotta look this up.
Yeah.
I gotta look him up.
Yeah.
That's why I love talking. I love doing these list shows, because you always tell me. Yeah, I will check. I will totally check them, because they have you know, horror sections for different cult directors and stuff.
Yeah.
But you always talk about stuff that I would never be on my radar if you hadn't mentioned it. So
I love his work ever since I was 10 years old, and I stayed up to watch one of his movies at like 2 in the morning, because the TV guide description said, you know, Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and Dracula and the Mummy team up to take over the world. And it's like, I gotta check that out.
And you, at 10 years old, you had a nervous breakdown. Yeah. Like, how is that possible?
That's the greatest thing
How is
ever.
It even possible? That's insane! Yeah. No! I gotta stay up. Okay, so the other ones I had for DVDs were, this one I just thought was, because, you know, most of the stuff I get DVD-wise is like, you know, I'll buy an entire series, or I'll buy a new movie if it comes out, kind of the opposite of you. I'm kind of the sucker for, like, you know, cool packing. I mean, at this point, I've got, you know, I've got a 4K and a Blu-ray, you know, the metal DVD cases from Best Buy for Blade Runner 2049. I've got the 3D version, and then I've got a version that came from Walmart that comes with a metal kit of the spinner that you can make. I've got a set coming from Amazon UK that comes with whiskey glasses, and then there's a set that is coming from Italy that has the gun, like Deckard's gun, that comes in this box. So I'm going to have like 8 versions of this movie, because I love all that packaging. So I tend to get new things, you know, or use things at Amoeba and stuff that have been out for a while. So I'll just put this in, because it's a new thing, and I just thought it was it was really fun. It's not like world changing, but it's the Batman, the 66 Batman animated Batman versus Two-Face.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Because, you know, here we go again with these. We've talked about this many times in the show, where like these two worlds sort of cross over. Like Sean Connery is going to play Indiana Jones' dad, and you know, so-and-so is in this movie with somebody or whatever, and those worlds that sort of collide. And to actually have something that exists with Adam West and William Shatner, you know, quotes around acting in a thing together, I think is really a fun thing to have. And I thought Shatner was really fun in it. Like he was really having fun with the voice work.
They really took a real leap with that story, eh? Like it went places I didn't think it would go.
Yeah, I agree. I don't love all the voice stuff in it. I mean, I think some of it's really good and some is kind of, but I didn't love the first one. I didn't love the tone of the first one. I thought it went way too far with the really goofy stuff.
I felt like the first 20 minutes of it felt like a Branson, Missouri show, you know, and I thought, are we just going to stay in the same spot we already been to and make everyone feel good? And then they went all over the map with it, and I thought, fine,
right.
You know, like do something interesting with it. This one, though, it did feel kind of more, yeah, bigger budget version of the show.
Yeah, and it was a decent, you know, if you're going to try to recreate this vibe of the 66 thing, I thought it did a slightly better job than the first one. The other one I'm going to hold off on until we talk about some more stuff, but it'll make sense later.
Okay.
Let's do books.
Yeah.
You want to do books?
I read a ton of books this year. None of them were any fun. I've been reading a lot of technical manuals, business books, self-help stuff. So the
form letters.
Letters. I just was about to read a book and I checked our 2016 Retro Awards and it was our book last year. So
to be fair, most people don't know that you actually can't read.
That's right.
So it takes you over a year sometimes to get through certain books.
I'm learning. The book I did pick up this year, and it's probably one of the few books I did, because I buy a lot of used books too, but I don't think that really counts, is I picked up the Elvira book.
Is that her autobiography?
Well, that's what I thought it would be, but actually it wasn't much of an autobiography at all. It's just beautiful photographic retrospective book.
Oh, cool.
If you're a fan of Elvira, and why the hell would you not pick up, like, why would you pick up that book if you weren't? Then you have
to. Put it this way. I don't know anyone. I know people that love her. I know people that are obsessed with her. I know people that, I don't know a soul that would go, oh God, I can't stand Elvira. Like, I've just always said, everybody loves Elvira.
Everybody loves Elvira, and they should.
They should.
Yeah.
They should. They absolutely should.
I mean,
I've always wanted to meet her.
Yeah, I have too. I mean, I used to just love her, and then I learned to respect her, and now I just, like, it's just crazy. I think the world
is
her. And I mean, like, I spent my teens and my 20s watching. She gave me such an appreciation for shitty movies. You know, my love of Nurse Sherry is from Elvira.
I'm sure it was the script. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it was the script. That, I'm sure you read it for the article.
There is almost no words in this book, but I still enjoyed it very much. So I didn't pick up a lot of books this year, and I feel bad about that.
I just picture some kid out there, you know, someone's got a kid and they hear about this and like they're 11 or 12 and that becomes their book report for the summer. You know, they come back to school in September and
I wrote a book report on the Elvira book.
Yeah. Not much of a story, but you know, you do a 4-page book report.
That's the only disappointment I had in that book is I had kind of been under the predisposition that it would be some sort of biography. And I, you know, her story's great and really there's nothing in it for that. But I'm fine with that. It's a beautiful, well-made book and that is my book pick of the year. Next year
Well, that's kind of like certain documentaries. You know, I go into it going, oh, this is going to be the, we're going to get some, you know, and it's just, if you come out of it going, well, that was nice, but it didn't go into anything that I was hoping it did.
Yeah.
That can be disappointing. Okay. So that's one of yours. So on that theme, continuing that theme sort of, I know this is a few years old, but I finally got my hands on it. Is the what's it called? Too Much Monster Business.
Oh,
the
Kirk Hammett book.
Oh,
that's fabulous.
Yeah, God, that's fun. That is, and again, you know, for me, I always like, and you know, I'm going to say this once because my heart kind of breaks about it, and I'm never going to speak of it again. But certain catalogs that I've kept, certain color spreads from the old toy shop paper that I've had for 20 some years, just to have photographic evidence of these things that existed in color, you know, whatever, I have misplaced, or they have gone in the garbage by accident or something. I don't know, but I've always liked having books or things that it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm collecting these things. Like, I can't imagine getting a book about, you know, tin toys of the 30s or something. Like, I just, that wouldn't be enough to, the monster stuff is like, I'm most likely never going to own any of this stuff. But I just dig looking at this stuff. Yeah. I love, you can almost smell it through the pages, what these toys, you know, they're just, it's so vivid. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And he knows his stuff. And I did, what I didn't expect was it to be as broad as it was, from original theatrical posters from the teens, you know, up to, you know, toys and coloring books and you name it. Like, it kind of runs the gamut. So
I guess an makes sense. Anecdote about that book and about Kirk that you might find funny. Your friend and mine, Mark Huckabone, was filming a Toy Hunter episode, and I was semi-involved with it, but unfortunately, I was recast. But I'll tell that story another time. But basically, they used another guy to play me in the episode. I think I can finally.
Well,
did
they know that,
that?
Did they know that you wouldn't do nudity? Is that part of it?
I was willing to do full frontal and full back. this was a really. Mark called me up and said, "I need a toy that Kirk Hammett doesn't have. I had that book and I had a toy for sale, and I said, give me this money and you have it." So they did an episode of Toy Hunter. I'm showing how the sausage is made, and they recreated that scene with Jordan calling a dude. And the only thing I remember texting Mark is, that dude's playing me. Like, screw you. The thing that killed me was I had sent Mark the toy with a copy of Rack Toys, because Rack Toys was semi-new, and I hadn't seen Mark in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk stole his copy of Rack Toys. And he Mark called me. And
said, oh, that's cool.
Mark said, yeah, you actually were pissing off the producer of the show. Because Kirk was sitting on the couch going through Rack Toys going, I didn't know this was made. I didn't know this was made. And Mark said, I also
wow.
got a copy of the book because Kirk just took that. And it's like, wow. That's awesome. You know?
So by that logic, on a certain level, he knows your name and he might have read my name in the book as well.
This is true. Yeah.
So somewhere in the recesses of the millions of names he's got in his brain, he might remember me if I ran into him.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's very cool.
That was one of my favorite compliments I got paid for that. Even, you know, out of that whole horrible being recast out of a Toy Hunter episode.
Well, I mean, the take in the book is great, but the fact that he's looking through it going, I didn't know this stuff existed.
Yeah.
And you're the guy that's bringing it to light. Like,
oh, that made me so happy. You know, I'm a fan
that's
of his,
pretty cool.
And I loved his book. So that was lovely. And
that's really cool.
So I'm glad you brought that up. So let's move right on to, let's go to TV for the year. What did you watch?
Oh, you know what? I got a couple more that I'm just going to throw in real quick.
I don't know how many
we're doing in each category.
Is that most of my books were not genre, so I don't really want to know if anyone wants to talk about Jen Sincero's books. But anyways,
these are quick. Yeah. But the one is there's a really nice coffee table book called The Art and Soul of Blade Runner that is kind of like a making of sort of a, you know, the art of Star Wars sort of thing. One of those books where you see the pre-production art and the ideas and where this thing gestated from. It's not incredibly thorough what I was kind of hoping for. If you look at some of the, like The Force Awakens, The Art of the Force Awakens, like that book, what's cool about that is digging into seeing the stuff that could have been, or seeing how the story gestated and where it might have gone with characters or whatever. There's not quite as much of that in this, but it's still a cool coffee table book. There's a Monty Python book called Hidden Treasures, which I think it might have come out the year before, but I got it this year. And you know, they do these books, which I think are really neat. You know, the Doctor Who vault.
Yeah, I think I have that book.
The Marvel.
Yeah.
Okay, and there's ones that they do that also have reproductions of memorabilia in the book. So in other words, not just a photo, like you can flip through and like four pages later, you can actually open an envelope in the book and take out a repro of a business card or something that was made, you know, for whatever the subject is. And there's a Monty Python one out that has, you know, reproductions of script pages and notes. And, you know, they first came up with the name, or like, here's a copy of a repro of the program/poster for the live at the Hollywood Bowl shows. And, you know, and then just some fun information throughout about, you know, and it's not like hugely in depth, but it's a pretty cool book. But the little envelopes that contain, you know, a ticket for the, you know, the first, you know, taping at the BBC and, you know, stuff like that are really fun. So I picked that up this year. Might have come out the year before, but it's pretty fun. And then Twin Peaks, The Final Dossier, which is, if anybody's seen this series, The Return, this thing came out, you know, 3-4 months after that wrapped. And then it's sort of a footnote on where everything went. And it's written as a dossier that someone has sort of compiled. So that's really cool. So on that note, let's move to TV. Okay. I'll hold off on the top one, but Stranger Things, I thought was great. It doesn't have the oomph quite that the first series had, and there's a couple of episodes that I would happily just dump all together. But it's still kind of a love letter to this, the way we sort of grew up and the stuff that we dug. And it's still better than most of what's on television. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that second season. I got through it pretty fast.
I actually don't dig it, and I don't know why, because I was that age. I have no idea what my problem is. But
yeah, I figured it'd be right up your alley. And I have to say, too, the kids in this thing are so good. You know, they're all so well cast, and they do such a good job that you overlook even some of the stuff that isn't quite as stellar as other things. But the kids are really great.
I have no idea what my problem is with that show. And it's not like I hate
it. No worries.
It's just like, not for me. And that seems so strange to come out of my mouth. But there we go.
Yeah, it kind of is. I can't answer that for you.
It came out the tail end of 2016, but I don't know if I mentioned it last year, but I thought The Return of Mystery Science Theater was perfect. I haven't disliked anything, like, be it riff tracks, be it the cinematic Titanic, anything that's come out of this crew, I've enjoyed. I'm a fan of the genre, but... Yeah, Joel pulled it off big time.
That's great.
I remember probably 4 years ago, he called me talking about Rack Toys, and he wanted to do an incentive for Kickstarter, and he was telling me about it. Like, he was telling me that the opening will be in real time, and I was kind of sitting there going, sounds great. But I couldn't, you know, I didn't have his vision, and yeah, he pulled it right off. It's amazing, and kudos to him.
You know what's funny? And I don't know if I ever told you this, but that last year, Dana Gould, I think I told you this, that Dana Gould did a live reading of Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Yeah.
At Largo.
I'd love to have seen
and
that.
It was Dana Gould and Dave Koechner was there. But the lead guy that had one of the main parts was the new Mystery Science Theater guy. Which I didn't realize at the time as we're watching this thing. I'm forgetting a lot of cool names that were in it too. There was, you know, a good 10, 11 people on stage and all the voices and stuff, and it was really fun. But he was in it, and I kept thinking, who the heck is this guy? And then, of course, not long after that, I saw the first bits of the new Mystery Science Theater. I went, oh, that's who that guy is. So I have not seen any of it, but I will get to it now that you've mentioned it. Next, I'd say, again, no order, but The Man in the High Castle.
What's that?
It was a Philip K. Dick book.
Oh.
And now it's been made into a series for Amazon. And I watched the first season, you know, a couple years ago, whatever it was, a year and a half ago, and I thought, eh, it's okay. Second season really kind of grabbed me. And the gist of it is the Nazis and the Japanese have taken over America, basically. That World War II didn't go the way it did in our history.
Yeah.
And as a period thing and as an alternate sort of, you know, an alternate sort of history that could have happened or whatever, it's really smart, and it really, it's an interesting premise, even just the book. I think the TV series goes to places that the book didn't. But it's really well done. And, you know, it's period because it takes place in like the late 50s, you know, 1960 or so. And this is what the country is at this point. But great cast and the detail, a spin on what would have been in Chicago and how they spin it. And now it's got, you know, propaganda on the building or whatever. Like it's pretty well done. So, I got into that more in the second season, and it's got a bit of a sci-fi thing to it, which is cool. I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but that's pretty cool. I also thought, got to put in Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Because we said goodbye to Peter Capaldi, which breaks my heart
season.
Because it was great. It was kind of everything that I've wanted from him
for him
from the beginning. I think it just was leaks better than the other stuff he was given to do.
Especially
and
his first season.
It's a shame because I think he was really coming into his own, and they were finally getting the scripts right for him. And
but I get why he
just
leaked, you know, too. So, you know, they made him sit out a year.
Well, again, I'm okay with him leaving and have his reasons for leaving. I just wish that we would have gotten more of what we got in this season earlier, like a better use of his talents. And I feel like he was a very underserved doctor with what he was capable of. And there were some misfires in how they wanted to sort of work him and stuff. And then, of course, the Christmas thing I thought was terrific and just, you know, just would love him to stay. But, I mean, the show has to move on. And then also Black Mirror, the new season of Black Mirror, Charlie Brooker. Yeah. Really good. Really good. We're kind of living in an age of anthology shows, which is really cool.
It's
really nice to see. There's another one that's on Amazon, which is a British co-production. Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams. So all
that's on TV here.
Yeah, all these hour-longs that are based on Philip K. Dick's short stories. And some are good, some are great. And then there's a couple of kind of misfires, but when it's good and great, it's like really, really well done. Great cast and production values and stuff. And now I'll let you go, and then we'll do our final TV.
I have more than two, but let's just stay with these two. Toys That Made Us, the documentary series on Netflix.
Okay.
I have to admit that I was entirely skeptical of this show being a 70s kid. It felt a lot like they were overly focusing on the 80s properties when I first heard about it. I remained kind of open-minded. Then they reached out to me, and I provided a couple things for the show. And I got to be honest with you, I watched the 4 episode over the Christmas break, and it was a very welcome thing. I really enjoyed it, and I think I enjoyed the episodes based on 80s properties the best because, you know, I know little to nothing about Masters of the Universe,
mm-hmm.
and that was such a well-done episode full of kooks that, you know, created He-Man and all the bizarre little things. They really captured some interesting stuff. The Barbie episode was fantastic. You know, I know a lot about G.I. Joe, so watching a G.I. Joe episode is sort of like repeating knowledge to me. So, yeah, I think it's a fantastic show. They've got 4 more in the chamber, and one of them is Star Trek, which will feature an interview with Marty Abrams from Mego, and I think that'll be fantastic.
Can I just say...
Well done, and I hope they get 8 more episodes.
I know this person is probably listening or might be listening. I don't know how much they listen to the show, but I'm afraid to say their name because I don't know if I should, but if they tell me I could, then we'll say it next time. But I know someone who worked on the show, who I got a very nice text from a few weeks back, and it literally said, "Man, I'm really kicking myself that we didn't get you and Hyler for the Star Trek show." He said, I'm listening to the podcast right now, and I really wish we'd gotten you guys for the Star Trek show."
Actually, my collection's featured in the credits.
Well, I thought that was a very nice compliment. I thought that was a very nice.
I was working with the clearances board. That is lovely, and we'd have loved to have done it.
Yes, we would.
We can talk,
especially since I, and, you know, live in Los Angeles.
The other thing,
you wouldn't have to pay me.
The other show that I wanted. Sorry, I'm just tramping all over you.
No. Go ahead.
The other show I wanted to talk about, and this might seem odd, is that I really deeply enjoyed Feud this year.
Oh, you know, I stayed with that up to the Sinatra episode because Toby Huss played Sinatra and just nailed it.
Dig that.
He just nailed it. He so nailed it. And then I think I dropped off after that because I can only take so much camp. But it is. I get why that show is so. You know, it was well done. It was good.
If you would put that on a piece of paper and said, "Brian, you're really going to enjoy this show about Joan Crawford and Betty Davis," I'd be like, "I think you have the wrong Brian." but I couldn't put that show down.
Oh, that's funny.
I really enjoyed it. And
couldn't watch Stranger Things and then couldn't look away from Feud. Interesting.
No, I didn't watch Feud alone, by the way. With my wife, and it became habitual.
Mm-hmm. What were you wearing?
But, I was wearing my usual nightie and negligee.
I thought it was going to be Taffeta. Your Taffeta
gown.
It was going
to be the bear suit on a Wednesday. but yeah, no.
I need to revisit it. I think I need to go back and pick up where I left off.
It was a lot of fun. I have some friends, and you know, mileage varies on it, but I thought it was interesting. Sure, I don't follow Feud to its new series.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool, man.
Well, I'll have to get back onto that. What was your number one? Because I have a number one, but what was yours?
Oh, I don't have a number
one. Oh, you don't?
So
okay,
no,
well,
not really.
Well, my number one TV show of the year, and again, quickly getting into my, you know, I put it with the original right next to it, is Twin Peaks: The Return. It was on Showtime.
Yeah, That's your baby, isn't it? And, it's a good year for you.
Yeah, man, because again, you know,
Twin Peaks and a Blade Runner film.
I didn't know what to expect from this thing, and I don't think it's perfect across the board, and it certainly didn't give me a lot of what I was hoping to get, but if you love the original show and you know the mythology and you're aware of this man's work and everything, like, this thing is, to me, Twin Peaks still holds up. I mean, initially, the second season kind of, you know, it's a different story. But that first season and that pilot and those first few episodes are still some of the greatest stuff ever on network television. And it really was one of those things that opened a door to a lot of what we've gotten since. And, you know, Damon Lindelof was at the panel at Comic-Con. You know, we got invited to the Twin Peaks panel because they all came to the booth and we did, you know, merchandise and stuff. And he got up there and said, "If not for Twin Peaks, I wouldn't have a career. Like, I owe everything that I've done to Twin Peaks," you know? And so this thing comes along and it is a trip. I mean, it is, you know, the fact that 18 episodes co-written and directed, every one of them directed by David Lynch, also sound design on these things. And he said from the beginning, it's really the kind of thing that you should sit and it's like an 18-hour movie and you got to just let it breathe. And again, it started to do the impossible. It's almost like he said, "Okay, all you got, you know, Lost and Dexter and, you know, Game of Thrones, you all think you're so cool what you're doing. You should wait till you see what I do." And he made this incredible show that is just mental. I mean, it's just, and it's emotional and it's weird and it's all kinds of stuff. And just gorgeous. I mean, I can't remember the last time I saw something on television and was just waiting with bated breath for the next episode. Like, where is this going to go? What the hell are they going to do? And on that note, I would say that my top DVD set is Twin Peaks: The Return, the Blu-ray set, because you know, getting into it a second time is even more incredible that you're picking up things that you might have missed. But the making of stuff on this DVD is the likes of which I don't know if I've ever seen, because there are about 10 documentaries that are fly on the wall like you are on the set, you are in these meetings, and you are right next to David Lynch and watching his process. And what you get from it is, you know, like, everything's going to be okay. It's great. No, we'll do it. Don't worry. Up to tell him he can't do it. And you're going to get snippy David Lynch going, what's the problem? Well, he said, no, we're going to get to it by 4 o'clock. And if we don't, we'll get, and you just get the sense that every line and every prop and every bit, he's got this thing in his head that he needs all these people for, but if he could, he would just get it out himself, you know, but unfortunately I need an actor to say the words and I need this person to do whatever, because he's got so much going on in his brain. It's a really impressive behind the scenes stuff, if anybody's interested in getting the series, but that was my top of the year. And then should we do toys?
That makes total sense why you held back on that.
So. Yeah, I figured I'd throw in the DVD after and not give it away. Do you want to do toys? Do we do a toy one?
Yeah, let's do toys and wrap it up because I've got to run. But go with your favorite toys of the year, like your first favorite toy of the year.
Well, a lot of the stuff that I've gotten over the years has been sort of, you know, maybe a Marvel Legends thing, like a Black Panther thing or whatever, you know, it's like not that everybody sort of gets this stuff. Disney stores are doing these new figures called Disney Infinity, which are based on these little sort of figurines that are kind of stylized, but they're action figures. And I really like them. They're heavy figures and they're, you know, hugely poseable and, you know, stylized versions of, you know, there's like a Kylo Ren and a First Order Trooper and a Rey, but they're doing a Spider-Man and a Captain America. They did an Iron Man. And it's really kind of, you know, not super deformed, but just a weird sort of thing that they're doing with the look of these things. And I happen to like them. Of course, I got to throw in the stuff that we're doing for Twin Peaks, the thing I was doing for Twin Peaks, because again, you know, I get to pinch myself and go, who'd have thought the show would ever come back and that we would get to make merchandise for this thing that I loved so much 25 years ago.
Of course.
The bobbleheads and the pinmates that we did. Tomy is doing these fun little diecast figures from Star Wars. They're the body is the torso is diecast and the arms are usually plastic, or it comes with a little gun is rubber or plastic, and they're about 2 inches high, maybe something like that. And I've really gotten kind of addicted to them. They're usually around $7 or $8 a piece, and they're fun little, you know, slightly off model. You know how much we love off model stuff from Star Wars.
Yeah,
you know,
that's my jam.
That's what it kind of reminds me of, some of them. And then, I'm not ashamed to say it. I love those Paddington movies so much that I couldn't believe it when I saw at the store. There is a Paddington action figure that comes with a little suitcase, and the suitcase opens up, and all the little accessories that come with the figure go into his suitcase. You know,
yeah,
his little head moves.
My Paddington bear problem, haven't I?
I didn't know you had it. I don't think I knew you had a Paddington bear problem.
It's years and years ago. I used to travel and do toy shows and all this stuff with my buddy Brian, who's an amazingly talented artist and a very, very funny guy. And every time we would see Paddington bear anywhere, he had this tick where he would go, said Paddington bear. And I guess it just came from his kids watching it. He was older than me. And he had two kids, and they would watch Paddington all the time. And he said that show drove him crazy. He also has, he's also bipolar. But
he's also what?
Because he's also bipolar, so he picks up on these. But he just used to say, like, all that show says is said Paddington Bear.
Said Paddington Bear. That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
Every time I see Paddington Bear now, I think of that, right?
Said Paddington Bear.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, it's definitely got the said Paddington Bear thing, which was in the books. Definitely got that vibe. But I just love that, you know, it's just a figure from the Paddington movie that's from the movie. Yeah. And, you know, his little sandwich can go under his arm, a little marmalade thing. But it comes with like a little marmalade jar and a pop-up book, which is in the new movie, you know, or a little notebook, whatever. All these little things fit in the little suitcase, and it's just kind of cool to have a figure of Paddington Bear that's not like a stuffed animal, but it's a figure.
Yeah, I get you. So, I feel you. I love that. And I don't have a lot this year because I was kind of, I was a good boy and I didn't buy a ton of stuff.
Good
but
for you.
I bought a few things, and one of them was Funko made a Playmobil Tom Baker.
Yes, I think I've got that too. Yes.
Just was like, yeah, I got to have that. And, you know, it's just, it's a perfect synergy of that happy Playmobilness and Tom Baker.
And yeah.
What more could you want, you know?
Yeah. That's fun.
Figures Toy Corporation continued on with their Super Friends lineup.
Okay.
There's few things I love more than the Super Friends. These guys making Mego-style action figures of the Super Friends is, like, it should just be called Brian's
Dream Toy Line.
And they're making crazy stuff. Like, they made the evil Super Friends from the Universe of Evil episode. So, Aquaman with an eye patch and Robin with a mustache. And
it was, yeah, that's digging.
All of it Brian must have.
That's digging deep, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that stuff. And, of course, the good people at Biff Bang Pow. You've heard of them?
I'm not familiar.
They keep cranking out these adorable Fisher-Price-esque characters of superheroes and TV characters that are now, like, taking over my home. I don't know.
Yes. Told you this. Oh, you're referring to the world-famous the Pinmate line that Biff Bang Pow does. Yes. Oh, I'm familiar with those. Yes.
I stare at about six sets of eyes while I watch TV now, because
that's awesome. Roommates
are below my television, and I welcome them.
That's awesome. You know? And your family likes them too, right? This is one of the things you can share with the...
They're the only upstairs collectibles, Jason.
That's hilarious.
Everything else is sent to the basement and with haste.
That's pretty cool. That's a plug right there. That's pretty cool.
The only thing I can smuggle into the house from a store, like, is a record. I can leave a record upstairs. But the rest is all that. Yeah.
Well, so, as long as you keep liking them, we'll keep churning them out for other properties.
Okay, so
I would
like to list my licenses you can make, and we'll start with Al Adamson movies.
And then we'll go on to Coffin Joe collection of Pinmate.
Al Adamson, you'll sell 5, 10
Right. And then Argento. We'll do all of Argento stuff.
Ah, yes, Dario Argento.
Well, that's cool, man. That's great. Oh, yeah, and one last thing, because we were going to do a thing for magazines, because I'm a bit of an addict, and I know you pick stuff up and, you know, get weird stuff.
Oh,
I tend to pick up movie magazines and music magazines and stuff like that, but so Shock Cinema, I'm just going to throw it out one more time. We mentioned it before, and this thing just keeps on giving. This magazine called Infinity, which is a British magazine, and like the newest issue's got, it's got The Prisoner on the cover, and you know, I think the Planet of the Apes TV series are like just these great. It's kind of like SFX magazine, which we both like.
Yeah.
But it's even deeper into the stuff that we like.
If you're listening to this, I'm going to make the leap of faith that you should be reading that. I think that's fair.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. It's wall to wall, all the stuff that, like I say, most magazines you get and I page through it and think, well, there's going to be 3 articles in here at least, maybe 4 that I'm going to want to read. I'll get this magazine. This thing is like cover to cover. It's filled with stuff that's right in our wheelhouse. So
I think the first issue I bought had Space 1999 on the cover, and then the inside was about Matt Helm films. And I was just sitting there like, did I write this and I don't remember it?
It's every one of them is like that. I think we're like 7 or 8 issues into it, and it's the whole thing. That's my big recommendation.
Tyler Durden thing? Do you think we actually make that magazine and don't know it?
Maybe we do. Maybe we're in so deep that we don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't sleep.
Or maybe it's a magazine coming through from an alternate universe, that in that universe we're making this magazine, and those us are trying to contact this us through the magazine and go, come on, there's an alternate world over here. What's it going to take? You know, we're making a magazine. Let's go.
This blew my mind, sir.
Could happen. It's possible. Yeah. Okay, well, that's our best of 2017. Next time we'll do a slightly longer episode, and we'll pick a topic. But we tend to do this every year, so we wanted to give you a little something to spend money on, so we're not the only ones spending money on shit we don't need, basically.
Hey, we're enjoying ourselves. Thanks everybody for your support, and we're looking forward to 2018 being awesome. And we're gonna try and get out there and do a few more shows as well.
And keep the comments coming. We love it. So thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much. The last compliment I got on Facebook was, you and I are the Lucas and Spielberg of podcasts.
That is the trip. I can't believe that. That's crazy. I don't know. I think you are you Lucas? Because you're kind of the quieter one, I suppose.
I'm assuming I'm Lucas.
I'll take either one. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Thank you, whoever said that. And thank you guys for listening. And Happy New Year to everyone. And all the best for a safe and happy 2018.
Take care and thanks for listening. Thank you.